This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly after 7 in the evening, welcome back to NHL Midweek. In case you just missed it, our predictions for the first round, the Jets, the Ducks. Richie P has the Ducks in 7. Ezra, Drew, and Remus have the Jets in 7. We continue on with our look throughout the NHL now by moving to the other series in the Pacific Division, the Canucks and the Flames.
Vancouver and Calgary.
First round series between these two teams, this is going to be a dandy of a series between the Canucks and the Flames. That's the reason why Remus was playing nickel back there, because they're from Alberta, right? Okay, just wanted
very
to
good, Drew.
I wanted to make sure I got that one right. They split the four games, Calgary winning 2 games, Vancouver winning 2 games. Vancouver won one of those games in overtime. And these are two teams that probably certainly nobody had that many hopes for the Flames this year. And Vancouver was a fringe team entering the season, whether or not they were going to be a playoff team. And now, because of the way the matchups fall, one of these two teams is going to be playing in the second round. What's your determining factor between these two teams, Richard?
Well, you look at this series, Drew, and you see kind of it's really the core players on Vancouver are your veteran guys. You have your Sedin top line. It's top heavy teams, okay? So you have your Sedin top line against your Monahan top line. Well, Monahan's been a little shaken up here, but
yeah, left ice early at practice today.
I still expect him to play, Drew. And so you've got, you know, kind of future against the present or even the past almost with Vancouver. So that's the key to me, because the secondary scoring, obviously, it's important, but this is a series where the best players will determine who wins, because the depth on both teams is kind of questionable. If the Sedins outplay the Monahan line, I think Vancouver wins, and if the Monahan line outplays the Sedins, I think the Sedins win. It's simplifying it, because I think Vancouver has the better defense on paper. Not to say that Weidman and Russell haven't been very important to Calgary's cause. Goaltending, Edmonton. Vancouver's going to go with Eddie Lack. And Calgary's, I think, going to go with Hiller. So you have the kind of veteran against youngster there, but clearly Vancouver has Miller available to them. I think this will be a really interesting series. I think it's going to go 7. I actually think every series in the West is going to go 7. But those would be the keys to me, as it's the youth top line against the Sedin's top line, because you know most guys, fans you talk to right now, couldn't name you Calgary's second line. They're apparently toying with the idea of putting Sam Bennett in the lineup, and you look at Vancouver's second line, I mean, they still have that hole there from Ryan Kessler.
Yeah, and Nick Bonino's, you know, done a nice job at times, Richie, but he hasn't really given them that offense that to replace that of Ryan Kessler. And really, that's come from Radim Verbata, who had 31 mm-hmm. goals, I believe, mm-hmm. this year. And he's on the second line there with Bonino and Chris Higgins. But this is probably the most top-heavy series of them all, especially on forward. I'm talking specifically on forward, as Richie mentioned. This team has relied so heavily on their two lines, and Daniel Sedin and Henrik Sedin have really reemerged as top players in the NHL. They had off years last year, and that's what we expected. And Sean Monahan, Yuri Hudler, and Johnny Gaudreau is arguably the best line in hockey right now. It mm-hmm. really is. Mm-hmm. The way they play together, and Sean Monahan really seems to be almost the unheralded player of that line. And Yuri mm-hmm. Hudler, you know, finishes with 76 points, a career year. It's been incredible. I said that he deserves to be a Hart Trophy candidate. That's how good I think he's been this year. Sean Monahan's big, strong. He's got vision. And Johnny Gaudreau, you know, he's Patrick Kane light. He really is. Mm-hmm. This guy has really surprised me. I didn't think Johnny Gaudreau was going to put up the offensive totals that he has this year. But, you know, he's a Hobie Baker Award winner. He's an excellent player. And as Richie mentioned, after that, you know, who's going to score for the Calgary Flames? You know, you got to expect that the Vancouver Canucks are probably going to put Alex Edler and Chris Tanev up against that top line. And, you know, Dan Hamhuis, maybe even, obviously, you'll remember him from the Olympics. He's a very good defensive defenseman. I think the edge right now, because Mark Giordano is out, Richie, I'd give the edge to the Canucks on defense, not by much, and not to take anything away mm-hmm. from TJ Brody and Chris Russell and Dennis Weidman, but I think, you know, Chris Tanev, I think, is an underrated defenseman. I think you're going to see how good he is in the series mm-hmm. If you haven't watched the Canucks a lot, and he just signed the 5-year contract extension. But to me, I give the slight advantage here on forward to the Vancouver Canucks, and a slight advantage on D. And I think, you know, when you're talking about goaltending, I'd probably give the slight advantage to Calgary. But that's because Ryan Miller isn't starting. It's Eddie Lack. But Eddie Lack doesn't have any NHL playoff experience. He was excellent. He was good for the Moose. And he was good down the stretch when Ryan Miller got injured. But again, this series is so close. And I know that the advanced stats crowd really doesn't like the Calgary Flames because their team Corsi and Fenwick is I think, the worst in the NHL.
It's worse. It's not quite the worst. But in terms of
they bottom were, five,
I believe,
sure.
Yes, bottom five. They were 27th. They were only better than Toronto, Colorado, and Buffalo.
Worst of any playoff team, for sure.
Yes.
And
Vancouver was also bad, for the record. Yeah. Vancouver was 21st.
Well, Vancouver, when you look at Vancouver's team, Richie, we've kind of talked about this. Vancouver's a little bit of a mishmash, really, because they're trying to find their identity. And you know, you saw them sign Derek Dorsett and Lucas Sabiza last week, kind of more kind of grittier players. And they're trying to change their identity under Willie Desjardins a little bit from more of a skill team. But make no mistake, I mean, this is going to come down to how well the Sedins played. And it was back in 2011 when the Boston Bruins shut the Sedin twins down, and that's why they won the Stanley Cup. Obviously, Ryan Kessler had an amazing Conn Smythe-like season that year, but really, it's the Sedins that pace the team, and they have been for 10 years now.
Can the Flames shut down the Sedins?
Yeah, I think their defense is suited to playing against the Sedins, and that they're not the most physical defense, but they're a smart defense, and they're a strong skating defense, and to succeed against the Sedins, you need to take away space. You can't give them time and space. And you need to be on them and in their face. And I don't need to be, you can sure be physical. I'm not talking about being dirty. Just being not giving them room. So the Jets struggled against them by giving them room a week and a half ago. I think speed's an issue here, guys. I think Calgary skates nice. I think Calgary's a better skating team. And I think that speed and pressure on Vancouver is going to be an issue. I think the Flames upset them. I think it's an upset, probably. And I think the Flames beat Calgary. The Flames beat Vancouver in this series in seven games. I think it's going to be a tight one.
These teams are only allowed to play playoff series that go seven games and into overtime by law.
And I think it's going to be Calgary's kind of youthful roster and lack of, and I think lack of awareness of what's at stake is going to be beneficial to them. And I think they're going to pressure that Vancouver team, and I think their skating is going to wear them down by game seven.
You're saying their precociousness is going to be the key?
Yeah, that's your word, not mine.
Well, the reason I say it is because on Saturday's game, Paul Edmonds came up to me and was giving me gears for saying the Flames were precocious too many times during the broadcast. So I'm giving it back to Paul a little bit there. Ezzy, what's your prediction for that one?
Even though I think that the Canucks have more talent, and even though they might be a little bit top-heavy, I also am picking the Flames here. And the main reason for that is because of how hard they work and how they play for Bob Hartley. I think Bob Hartley is easily a Jack Adams candidate this year. I think you could throw Paul Maurice in there, and he might have maybe an advantage over Paul Maurice. But I think that when it comes down to it, I think that this team is going to really be all over the Vancouver Canucks. I think they're going to relish, whether you call them the underdog, the Flames are the underdog just because they were not very good last year. And the Vancouver Canucks have been in the playoffs more than the Calgary Flames over the last five or so years. So I think they're the underdog, whether there's a big point difference or not. But I think the Calgary Flames are going to steal a game or two, and they're going to have to. But I think the series is still going to go to seven games. And, you know, I think that when you look at the two teams, I don't think there's going to be that many games where you see one team be noticeably dominant over the other. I think it's a series that's going to be a bloodbath. It really is. I think even though
take the Oilers to win?
Yeah. No, but even the Vancouver Canucks, Richie.
Number of games. Give me another. Tell me.
I'm taking the Flames in seven, Drew.
You're taking Flames in seven as well. I'm also going to take the Flames, but I think for whatever reason, it's one game quicker. I think it's the Flames in six. And the magical dream season in Calgary, I think, carries on. Quick question before we go to break. Would you put Sam Bennett into the Flames lineup?
You know, Richie mentioned that earlier, and you know, even though Bob Hartley isn't going to listen to what the guys on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show say, I think there's all the reasons to put him in, Richie, because of how talented he is. And even though, you know, you might maybe give him less of a scoring role, I mean, we saw Sam Bennett. He got the first goal against the Jets on Saturday. I mean, this guy was
I don't remember anything from that game on Saturday.
Actually, he got the assist on the goal. Furland got the goal, but you remember Bennett had it on the wraparound there. So speedy, and he was excellent for the Kingston Frontenacs. I have no problem with putting him in there, and as we've seen out of Calgary, you know, looks like he is going to play in game one.
I mean, Mason Raymond would come out of the lineup. Calgary boy, that's kind of be harsh. Maybe that's just to take wake up Mason Raymond for a game. And that's remember, Mason Raymond, Calgary boy, making the playoffs in Calgary and against his former team. This might just be a little bit of a ploy to get him going for game one.
Sure. Let's head to break. When we come back, we have the Wild and the Blues preview up next. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We are live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
It's only fitting that as we come back to talk about the Blues and the Wild series, we play a little bit of Nelly.
I've always been a big hip-hop guy, Drew.
I'm a huge hip-hop guy. Are you going to be able to do this for all the series, Remo? You're confident?
It's not that hard. It's not that hard. You can pick one. I mean, you can pick one city
I know. I just want to make sure. I want to see if he's actually prepared or if he's just doing this off the cuff.
Maybe for Chicago, Nashville.
Could have played Prince here, you know.
I considered it.
Yeah, Prince would be from the Twin Cities, of course. This segment of NHL Midweek is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com.
St. Louis and Minnesota.
St. Louis and Minnesota, as we continue our look at all the playoff series in the NHL. This one sort of reminds me of the Jets and the Ducks in that the Blues were the second best team in the Western Conference, you know, only a couple points behind the Anaheim Ducks for the top team in the Western Conference, and yet nobody's giving them much respect. A lot of people predicting the Wild are going to upset the St. Louis Blues, largely on the back of Devan Dubnyk and the outstanding streak he's been on for the past, I don't know, was it 40 games or so since he was acquired from Phoenix, or Arizona, rather. How do you see this series playing out between the Ducks and, not the Ducks, the Blues and the Wild, rather?
This is an interesting series, and I think it contrasts in styles, really, Drew. I know they added Chris Stewart, Minnesota did at the deadline to add some size, Ezzy, and even some speed into their lineup. They play a quick game, but they're not as fast as maybe I thought they were, and you watch them a little bit more. They're very skilled, Minnesota is, and they move the puck real nice, and they're smart. Positionally very smart, Mike Yeo has done a nice job there. Overall, talent-wise, St. Louis is better forwards, in my opinion, although not by much, and better defense, in my opinion, although not by much. And it comes down to goaltending. And it looks like, based on Ken Hitchcock's comments today, and who knows, they're going to start with Brian Elliott. And to me, it's Jake. I don't care if Brian Elliott's played better against Minnesota in the regular season or whatever it may be. Jake Allen would be the guy to start here. I don't trust Brian Elliott. I've said that before. I'm going to stay consistent on that. And while I think St. Louis is a better team, and if they even had a goal, I think St. Louis is the better team on paper. But I think Minnesota is going to have an edge in the series in terms of overall roster, and I mean that by the goaltending makes up for other things. And Dubnyk's been great. I mean, did anybody expect it? No, I don't. Like, Chuck Fletcher will come out, and I like the fact that he's honest, and he tells the media the truth. He didn't expect this. I mean, nobody expected this. But the Wild play a very fundamentally sound game. So do the Blues. The Blues are bigger and stronger. Tarasenko back's important, and Steen back is important. I do worry about St. Louis sometimes creating offense off the cycle if Minnesota plays them as they can, a defensively responsible game. Mikko Koivu's very solid defensively, Ezzy. Smart defender. You know, Zach Parise working hard. I think this is very much a, again, I think this is a seven-game series as well.
And I'm noticing a pattern so far. Yeah. They played four games against each other. Minnesota won two. St. Louis won two. One in a shootout.
Yeah.
No real injury concerns here. St. Louis is top five in the NHL in goals for, goals against, power play, and just outside the top five, they're eighth in penalty killing.
You could argue that aside from goaltending, St. Louis is the deepest team in the NHL, period. When you look at who they have on defense, Alex Pietrangelo, I think, is underrated. I know that he went to the Olympics, but when you're talking about, you know, he hasn't won a Norris Trophy, he's kind of below that top tier after Drew Doughty and Shea Weber and Duncan Keith. You could say he's, you know, maybe the fifth or sixth best defenseman. But I think he's underrated for really how good he is defensively. And that's not to mention that on the other side, you've got Ryan Suter, who plays half the game. And I think he's also a top five defenseman in the NHL after those big guys. He's not that far off the Drew Doughtys and the Shea Webers. And when you break it down, the Minnesota Wild, they went out and they got Thomas Vanek in the offseason, and he started to come on in the second half of the season. And, you know, Richie mentions that, choking, and he wasn't very good for the Montreal Canadiens in the playoffs last year after they acquired him prior to the trade deadline. But when you break everything down, you know, Drew, you mentioned that the St. Louis Blues have a top five offense, top five defense, and you know, the special teams are excellent. But to me, I got to agree with Richie that right now, heading in here, you've got Jake Allen, who has been the goalie of the future now for a couple of years. He's going to start for the St. Louis Blues, and he's going up against Devan Dubnyk.
Is he
going
to start?
Well,
Hitchcock seemed to lean towards Elliott today.
Well,
but they're not proclaiming a starter, as far as I could tell, Drew, unless I missed something by this afternoon.
I haven't seen an update on that.
I think
on that
with,
front
the, with the way Jake Allen was playing down the stretch, I think that he had the slight advantage.
I don't disagree that he should be starting.
Jake Allen got the start in the last game. Yeah. No, pardon me. Brian Elliott got the start in the last game of the season when the Blues beat the Blues beat the Wild. So I don't know. Take that for what it's worth. If you're gonna,
I would. I think based on Hitchcock's comments, it seems to be they're leaning towards Elliott. But again, he could be playing mind games. He's good at that.
Wouldn't you? I mean, I understand why you don't love Brian Elliott, but I mean, isn't there sort of almost a veteran prerogative? See what he's got, and then
not in this case, no. Brian Elliott, the guy's played hard. He's been a respectable veteran for a long time. He's a 1B for me, max. And if you're going to win the cup, it's very hard to win a cup with a 1B.
Has he?
Well, I think, you know, back to what I was saying before, I think that, you know, the advantage, whether it's Brian Elliott or Jake Allen in net, I think you give the advantage to the way Devan Dubnyk has played over the last 40 games with his save percentage. And, of course, there's going to be a concern that he can't hold that up and he doesn't have the playoff experience, but neither does Jake Allen. And if he ends up getting the starts. And so I think that these two teams are so evenly matched that you can't really find a swaying factor, if you want to call it that. Vladimir Tarasenko has been excellent this year for the St. Louis Blues, but I think when you look at the Minnesota Wild, I think, you know, they've got an excellent top line. Zach Parise has had a great year, and I think that really these two teams are it's going to be back and forth the whole way.
Is it strictly become the function of the goaltending then that's the difference between the two teams?
Well, when you have a difficult time discerning who the better team is, and maybe if it's slightly St. Louis, I think on paper, and the goaltending I think is a significant factor, then that has to sway. You know, Drew, you look at this is the kind of a series, by the way. I think Nino Niederreiter will really succeed in a physical series like that. Minnesota's not the most physical up front, but they're, again, as I said before, they're smart. They have a very underrated back end. You know, Spurgeon's a good player, and Scandella's a good player, and their top guys, Birdie and Suter, are good players. As you know, St. Louis can come at you with three lines, and that's going to be dangerous, and it's going to be an absolute battle. But if St. Louis went into this series with even, I thought, convincingly average to slightly above average goaltending, I would probably pick them go all the way to the cup. That's how significant I think it is. Again, I'm not saying it's impossible by any means. This is a coin flip series, like the other two are in this conference. But I'm going to go with Minnesota in seven.
You're going to go with Minnesota in seven. I'll mark that down. Let me ask you this. I mean, can you see Ryan Suter sort of maybe neutralizing Vladimir Tarasenko? And then if that happens, the Blues are going to have trouble finding that secondary offense.
It's not a concern for me at all.
Yeah,
this Blues team, and I know that they've now broken up the TJ Oshie, Alexander Steen, and David Backes line, and now they've got Jaden Schwartz on the left wing. Stastny's now playing the first line center, but you know, even on the third line, you've got Backes now as your third line center between Patrick Berglund, who's struggled at times over his career, and Dmitry Yaskin, really big player who's got a bit of a scoring touch on the left wing. They've got a lot of lines that can hurt you, Drew. And sure, Ryan Suter, I mean, he can shut down anybody. He's one of the top defensemen in the league. And that's why he plays big minutes for this team, and he played big minutes in the Olympics. I mean, he's that good. He's an all-star. But, you know, on the flip side, you know, if the Minnesota Wild have some struggles, and they had those struggles earlier on in the season, they have three lines that can score. Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, you have two very good teams here, and I've gone both ways. To me, this is the hardest series to predict. You know, I almost don't want to predict. I'll take the Blues in six, and it's a hard choice to make. And I know the Minnesota Wild upset the Colorado Avalanche last year, and you know Richie mentioned Nino Niederreiter, he got the game series winning goal in overtime there. But you know I think that the depth of the St. Louis Blues is going to really persevere despite the fact that I think Minnesota right now has the edge in goal.
I'm going to echo Richie, but I'm going to say that it's going to be the Wild in six. So, Richie, you had the Wild in seven, and I think this will probably be the end of Ken Hitchcock's reign in St. Louis if that occurs. I think you'll see a parting of the ways if the Blues flame out in the first round again.
That'd be interesting to see if that happens, Drew. I don't know why I think this, but I know Hitchcock's from Edmonton. It's because purely speculation. But if they do bow it early, and I think that's a big if. I picked Minnesota, but that could go either way.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder if he doesn't find his way back in the young team with a lot of talent.
I think it's a disappointment if the Blues get knocked out in the first round. This team, they didn't go out and get Paul Stastny to just make the playoffs. This team wants to win a Stanley Cup, and year after year they've been knocked out by teams that have gone on to win it. And so this team is now built, and you know, with the emergence of Vladimir Tarasenko in his second year as an elite offensive player, I mean, the time is now for this team, and Jaden Schwartz has had a good year, and you can go up and down the lineup, and Kevin Shattenkirk's had an excellent offensive season. So last year they went out and they got Ryan Miller. That didn't work, and now they've gone with, you know, the remaining two goalies, and if that doesn't work, you probably start. I wouldn't disagree with you, Drew. Ken Hitchcock isn't under contract past this season, is he?
I believe that. I think that's correct. So, his contract is up at the end of the year.
Maybe that's a move they decide to make.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the Nashville Predators-Chicago Blackhawks series. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek. It's our playoff preview special, 3 hours for you this evening as we go around the NHL looking at all of the different playoff series. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Nashville and Chicago.
Nashville and Chicago. The Predators, one of the best teams in the NHL throughout the course of the season, draw one hell of a bad matchup against the Chicago Blackhawks. A now healthy Chicago Blackhawks as Patrick Kane has been cleared and is likely to play for the Blackhawks in round one. Is the Kane addition to the Blackhawks lineup changed the end result of this series?
I actually like the Chicago Blackhawks with or without Kane in the lineup, and I'll tell you why. I think the Nashville Predators, to me, are the perfect candidate, Richie, to be the Colorado Avalanche of last year. I think they've overachieved. And that's not to take anything away from the job that Peter Laviolette has done with the Nashville Predators, but they've relied heavily on the goaltending of Pekka Rinne. And we've seen that Pekka Rinne, since he was injured kind of midway through the season, he hasn't been the same goalie. And the Nashville Predators have kind of fallen off. They were still ended up finishing as a top team in the Western Conference, but there was a part of the season where they were starting to pull away from the Chicago Blackhawks and the St. Louis Blues. In this series, Drew, I don't think there's a favorite. I think you could easily call the Hawks the underdog just based on the fact that they had less points. But to me, they're not much of an underdog. This Chicago Blackhawks team easily could have won the Stanley Cup last year. We remember how good that series was between the Chicago Blackhawks and the LA Kings. You know, back to Patrick Kane, he's coming back, I believe, 4 weeks earlier than was originally predicted. And, you know, we thought a couple weeks ago he wasn't going to be coming back until the second round. But, you know, he's back now. And I think that just sways, you know, the momentum more in Chicago's favor, Richie. Patrick Kane was over a point-a-game player, leading the league in points when he went out with the clavicle injury. And this Chicago Blackhawks team, I think, really, we haven't seen the best from them. And we know that, you know, the Jets own them in Chicago this year, beating them three times. And they really, it took them a while to get going. And it's possible, by the way, that Antoine Vermette might be a healthy scratch against the Nashville Predators. He's had no goals since coming over.
Yeah, I think three assists total.
Yeah, and he hasn't been good, but, you know, I really like, you know, based on what our friend Scott Powers said coming out of that series, it looks like what they're going to do is they're going to put Patrick Sharp on the third line there. So what they're going to do is they're going to have Brad Richards play with Patrick Kane, and they had a lot of success earlier in the season. And then you're going to see Chris Versteeg play with Jonathan Toews and Marian Hossa on that top line. The left side. So, and Brandon Saad is going to be the left winger on the Brad Richards and Patrick Kane line. So there's so much depth there at forward. And mm-hmm. what they've done this year, Richie, which has been the big difference between previous years, because they lost Nick Leddy, what they've done is they've broken up Brent Seabrook mm-hmm. and Duncan Keith, and they have Brent Seabrook playing with Johnny Oduya, and then they've got Nicholas Jarmolson playing with Duncan Keith. Not saying that you're going to see that, but that's what they've been doing, and that those were the combinations. And I think that, you know, to me, Rich, the major difference here is even though the Nashville Predators have had this kind of Cinderella story and Philip Forsberg has had this great rookie season, I think they're not very good up the middle. And mm-hmm. when you talk about the experience and the forward depth, Corey Crawford's had an unbelievable season. Not many people are talking about it. His numbers have been excellent this year. He doesn't get the edge. Pekka Rinne is a better goaltender, but I don't think it's as big of an edge as you'd think. So to me, I like the Hawks. I like the Hawks big.
Head-to-head, the Hawks won three games. The Preds won one. Two of the Hawks' wins were in overtime, though. One in overtime and one in the shootout, rather.
I mean, a bit tight series. Chicago's got a lot of depth up front, as you mentioned. Nashville has a lot of players that are NHL-quality players for sure. Top-end talent, I think, lacks. Are you going to rely on a team with Mike Ribeiro as number one center to drive the bus? I'm not. Their defense is tremendous. Roman Josi is apparently underrated. Seth Jones and Shea Weber are both very good players. You know, Cody Franzen can play. Ekholm's even a guy who moved the puck all right. Rene speaks for himself in terms of quality, and Peter Laviolette has a pretty good playoff pedigree. You know, wins a cup in Carolina, gets the finals with the Flyers, so he's been there before. Obviously, Quenneville's won twice, and is one of the best coaches in the league right now, and has won as many games as almost everyone except for, I think, four coaches in the league history, three or four. So, I mean, Coach, I don't know if I think there's not much of an edge. I think overall that Chicago's depth up front scoring-wise is going to be the difference, because the back end of Chicago's pretty darn good, too. I think Nashville's back end is really good, but so is Chicago's. Maybe if Nashville's a slight edge on the back end, Chicago's got a bigger edge up front. And sure, Nashville's got an edge in goal, I think. And as you mentioned, Crawford playing well. But getting the whole crew back in Chicago and ready to roll and for the postseason, home ice I don't see as a huge concern because of the depth up front for Chicago. And as you mentioned, the pairings, I mean, you can throw either of those pairings out all the time, or those lines out, one of those three lines, you're not as worried about matchups because you can trust those guys. I think Nashville's going to push Chicago hard. I think they're going to make them play a more physical game than they want, and I think Nashville's going to rein it in a bit with Peter Laviolette's style. It's going to rein it in just a bit, but I see Chicago winning in seven.
Richie, I actually misspoke earlier. Brandon Saad is actually playing on the first line with Toews and Hossa, and they've got Versteeg with Richards and Kane, and they've put Sharp, Andrew Shaw between Brian Bickle and Patrick Sharp on the third line,
yeah.
And Vermette's not playing, and then Nordstrom, Kruger, and Tara Vinen are on the fourth line. But, you know, Richie makes a good point. You know, the coaching advantage, I think you got two coaches with a lot mm-hmm. of experience, and I think we both agree that Pekka Rinne gets the slight edge in goal. But as we know, Corey Crawford's won a Stanley Cup. I think the edge is really on the top couple lines of the Chicago Blackhawks. And, you know, Philip Forsberg is going to get some points. And I think Mike Ribeiro, he's done a nice job.
But Forsberg struggled in the second half of the year.
He has. And the whole team has. Yeah. And that's why, to me, that, you know, the advantage here is to the Chicago Blackhawks, because I do think, again, I don't think that you can really be wrong by saying that the Predators have overachieved. They started off very well, and they just mm-hmm. kept riding it. And to me, that reminds me a lot of the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of that had to do with coaching, but a lot of that had to do with the fact that Pekka Rinne is one of the three best goalies in the NHL. He might be number two behind Carey Price. And I just think, you know, with Patrick Kane coming back, you're adding the most dangerous player in the series to a forward group that is already dangerous. Jonathan Toews elevates his game in the playoffs. We see guys like Andrew Shaw and Brian Bickle every year for this team. Well, the years they've played for this team elevate their game during the playoffs. I think, you know, even though Shea Weber is the best defenseman in the series, I think Duncan Keith isn't that far behind him. Nicholas Jarmelson can play a physical game. I think I agree with Richie. I think, you know, just like the other three series in the Western Conference, maybe with the exception of the Vancouver-Calgary series to a certain degree, this series is going to be extremely physical. And that's right up the Chicago Blackhawks' alley.
It's just a bad matchup for Nashville. When, I mean, you'd look at, you know, with Kane, Taves, and Hossa, you know, the third best Chicago forward is better than anybody that Nashville's putting out there.
Yeah, that's true. But that might have been the case against any of the teams they played, Drew.
That's fine. That's, yeah. That's,
I mean, St. Louis, same thing.
Yeah, I mean,
Minnesota.
And that speaks to how good. But I mean, you're looking at, you know, at some point in time, if you're relying on your offense to be, you know, from Mike Ribeiro, or you're relying on James Neal to drive your offense, I mean, you're not going to succeed, I think.
I mean, I don't think they can be part of a driven offense. I just don't think that can be. They can be the sole guys. I mean,
but they are.
They are in this case, Drew. I agree with you, and I think, you know, the style of play that you want to employ against Chicago, I mean, if you want to open up and play a little bit more open, you're going to get beat by a more skilled team, in my opinion. So you have to rein it in a bit. Maybe reining it in a bit is hurting you because you tried to open it up more, and then you're going backwards and you're not playing the same style. Having said that, Edmonton Oilers, what, in 2006, completely changed their style for game for round one and upset, was it Detroit in round one? So it's possible to change and still win. Pierre Laviolette's not a guy who likes to hatch it down defensively, and I don't think he's suddenly going to do that now. And I'm not saying he should. I'm just saying that if he doesn't, he could be burnt, and if he does, he could be burnt. So it's kind of a catch-22. That doesn't mean that this team, I have been going seven games, because Rene's that good, and the Predators can score. I mean, you know, they have guys who can put the puck in the net. They have nice depth. They're like, they're fourth, third. Those guys can put the puck in the net. Craig Smith's a good player. Like, I like a lot of their guys on their squad. They just don't have the top-end talent. And Hossa's played better in the second half. Kane, while injured, maybe more rested. Taves had some dominant performances later in the season. Sharp never really got going, but maybe that now's the time, although it seems like he's on his way out of town there eventually. I just think Chicago, I don't know Chicago, this is Chicago's year, but I think they're good enough to win round one.
Ezzy, Richie says Chicago in seven.
I like Chicago in five. And I think Chicago is going to be very tough to beat this year in the Western Conference. And we see it year after year. This team elevates their game around April. And I think even though the Nashville Predators group of defensemen, you know, and we haven't even talked that much about Seth Jones. We've talked mainly about that top pairing of Shea Weber and Roman Josi. But up and down, you know, and they added Cody Franzen to this group too. From the Toronto Maple Leafs, but I think the Chicago Blackhawks are going to be just too much to handle. I don't even think we've seen the best of the Chicago Blackhawks this year, so I like the Hawks in five.
I think the Hawks see a relatively clear path to the Stanley Cup Finals out of the West.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think they get out of the second round.
Okay. Well, one of us is going to be right. One of us is going to be wrong. We'll find out sooner rather than later which one it is. I got the Hawks in five in this series as well. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll shift our focus to the Eastern Conference. We start between the Montreal Canadiens and the Ottawa Senators. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Before we came on air there, Rima said this was the most cliche song he could have picked to talk about the Montreal Canadiens-Ottawa Senators series, and I can't argue. I knew it was going to be Arcade Fire. It's just a matter of which Arcade Fire song it was going to be.
Maybe Leonard Cohen?
Leonard Cohen's not cliche, though. Once he said cliche, it was... No, Leonard Cohen's a Canadian legend.
Yeah, but I mean, like, cliche as far as being associated
with
Montreal.
Yeah, but I mean, no. Arcade Fire is way more associated with...
It's also more kind of modern.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to hear him play Leonard Cohen. It would take me back
Death
to my
from
youth.
Above 1979. That's a good band for Montreal.
There you go. Thank you, Ezzy. This segment of NHL Midweek is brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.com. royalsports.me if you're looking for your white Jets gear, and we know you are. If you haven't bought it yet from Royal Sports, head down to Royal Sports, either of the two locations. They are absolutely loaded with white jerseys and other white Jets gear, getting you set up for the whiteout.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Drew. Go to Royal. They've got everything there. It's funny, on Saturday, a bunch of people were asking us as we were heading to the game, you know, do we have to wear white for that final regular season game? And we were telling people, well, at least I was saying, you know, if you want to wear white, I don't think it's an official whiteout. And a lot of people did wear white. But, you know, a lot of people are still asking me, like, what do I have to wear? Does it have to be a white jersey? We were all there. For those who weren't there, you just got to wear something that's white. It doesn't necessarily have to be a jersey, right? And you're good.
Was that necessary?
Well, I'm just saying, a lot of people have been asking me, you know, at work or on the streets, because, you know, I have my ear on the streets.
Actually, I think you live on the streets is what
I'm saying.
Is.
I mean, a lot of some people that weren't there for Jets 1.0 for the whiteout, and, you know, some people are going to wear all white. But as long as for me, as long as you have a white shirt, you're good. But you just definitely want to have something that's white.
As long as you're wearing a shirt, to the game three, we'll be okay.
Yeah, a shirt and, yeah, and
we'll
a pants.
We'll be in the press box, so I mean, it's not like there's a whiteout in the press box.
Thank you for clarifying that again.
Montreal and Ottawa.
Montreal and Ottawa in the first round playoff series. Before we begin, we obviously send our condolences to the Ottawa Senators, the passing of assistant coach Mark Reeds, as he's been fighting cancer since March of 2014. He lost that battle with him with cancer earlier today. When we send our condolences on his passing.
Inspiring performance by the Senators. It's terrible circumstances surrounding the franchise. I mean, you know, you hope better things are on the horizon. Forget the results in the first round. It's just been a lot of difficult things to deal with there in Ottawa, more important than these games.
Sure. You have also what's happening to Brian Murray, of course, his battle with cancer, and Mark Reeds as well, as I just mentioned. Our condolences there. Shifting awkwardly to the performance on the ice between these two teams. This isn't a great matchup, I think, for the Montreal Canadiens. You look at them head-to-head. Ottawa won three games. The Habs won one game when they played each other earlier in the season. And, you know, if you are if you have an analytics bent, you're going to point to the fact that Ottawa dominated Montreal in terms of puck possession to 5-on-5 during those four games they played.
Yeah, but Montreal is one of those enigmas as far as advanced stats go, Drew, because we saw the Montreal Canadiens come into Winnipeg and dominate the Winnipeg Jets, and they won that game because Andrei Pavlik was the difference. You remember the shots.
The Jets won that game.
The Jets won the game. The Habs outshot them 20-5, I believe it was, in the first period, and it was more than just the shots. The Habs were just excellent, both 5-on-5 and on the power play. But, you know, you mentioned, you know, how this is you know, not the best matchup for the Montreal Canadiens, not just based on, you know, what the analytics say, and the fact that the Ottawa Senators were very good against the Montreal Canadiens in the regular season. The Montreal Canadiens are playing a team that really has magic behind them. They really have defied all of the odds, and, you know, winning the 21 of the last 27 games or whatever it was, you know, was really incredible. The Ottawa Senators were a bottom five team when Paul McLean was fired. And, you know, they've been incredible. Andrew Hammond is the Hamburglar is one of the greatest stories, along with Devan Dubnyk. So to me, when I look at the series, you know, even though Carey Price is probably going to win his first Hart Trophy, and the Montreal Canadiens have some pretty big advantages, I think, when it comes to, you know, line combinations and their offense, I think the Ottawa Senators have really, you know, shown how when you give some younger players an opportunity to shine, whether it's Mika Zibanejad, whether it's Mark Stone, these guys have really taken the bull by the horns. And Mark Stone's been an excellent story. He's really emerged as one of the top rookies this year. But to me, I can't go against Carey Price. To me, this Montreal Canadiens team, even though, you know, their possession numbers haven't been very good, Drew, you know, this team really relies on not giving up many goals. And I still think, you know, Max Pacioretty, let's get that, you know, out of the way first and foremost. Tony Marinaro of TSN 690 was on Hustler and Lawless, and he said he'd be surprised if he plays game one. Yeah. He might even miss game two. I still think that even though that's you know, going to be a big loss, Richie, mm-hmm. I still like the Montreal Canadiens in this series. I think, you know, watched them quite a bit this year in Winnipeg and just, you know, in other games. And, you know, Plekanec between Gallagher and Galchenyuk is one of the best lines in the NHL. Such a dynamic line. And, you know, they might be a little bit small, but they've got so much talent. And, you know, they added DeFonte Smith-Pelly, and they've got players like Dale Weiss and Brandon Pruss who can mix it up and chip in the odd goal. But to me, the big advantage is in goal. And I know Andrew Hammond has been an incredible mm-hmm. story, Richie, but I think, you know, Carey Price is so good that I think that he's going to be able to be the difference in this series. And, you know, I think this Montreal Canadiens team, they got a taste, and they were close to getting to the Stanley Cup Finals this year. Mm-hmm. And I think their experience and you know, their huge advantage in goal, I think, is just going to be too much for the Ottawa Senators.
Habs have the advantage in goal. You know, regardless of how well Hammond has played, you got the best goaltender in the National Hockey League going up there, who seems unfazed by all that's around him. Mm-hmm. Whether it be Olympics, whether it be the pressure to win the record-setting game in Montreal. Asterisks aside, you know, because all the shootout wins and all that stuff. But overall, I don't think the Habs have an advantage on the back end or up front. And I'm not sure if they have an advantage behind the bench either. You know, you could look at the back end. I think Subban and Carlson are a bit of a wash. Carlson's been dynamic, though, this half. He might have played himself into maybe second in the Norris Trophy running here, probably to Drew Doughty. But he might even win it, Drew Doughty not making the playoffs. That's for another day, okay? But you get past Carlson and Subban, and then you look to the rest of the defense. Obviously, Markov's a real good player. Mathot's been a nice, solid addition, a nice, solid player for Ottawa, especially since signing the contract, yeah, solidified the back end. Mm-hmm. The other guys are tough. Grybe is tough. Borecki's tough. I always pronounce his name wrong. Wierkosz can move the puck. You know, I mean, this is a good back end. It's a nice mix. Cody Ceci moved the puck as well. You look up front. I mean, the way the Ottawa's been playing, are their top two lines in? And Bobby Ryan had, 1 point in his last 9 or 10 games there when they made the run?
Yeah, they're doing this without Bobby Ryan there.
Yeah, well, he's there.
He's there, but he's not contributing offensively. But,
you know, the skill that they have, a mix of speed and size there that they have, and youth, and then their bottom lines. I don't think their bottom lines are any worse than the Habs. I think the forwards are probably a wash. The defense is pretty similar. You know, I'd probably even give the edge a little bit to the Sens on the back end, maybe even up front slightly, one through 12.
5-20 goal scorers for Ottawa, so they spread it out.
And I think this is going to be a, you know, I've said that about every series. I'm picking 7-game series in every one of them. I got the Sens in 7.
You know, something about the Sens, it just seems like they're on a, you know, I know Montreal's been very good all year, but there's something, it's simply about this matchup. Seems like the Sens are on a bit of a magical ride, and I don't see any reason when these teams play each other, unless Carey Price is otherworldly.
Well, it could happen.
Carey Price could give up less than a goal a game in this series and have a 960 something save percentage, and the Habs, and he could steal the Habs the series.
The Habs have to be able to get to the front of the net. And you look at the size Ottawa's got back there. They got some size, and they're mean. Remember, two, three years ago, they played in the playoffs. And Montreal could not get in front of the net. They couldn't penetrate the crease and the red area, they call it.
And Terry, that's when Therrien lost his mind after laid the hit. Eric Grybe laid the hit. Yeah. It bloodied. Who did it bloody?
I'm thinking of Richard Zednik and Kyle MacLaren now. That's how old the school I'm thinking.
Yeah, I can't remember who he bloodied, and there was a brawl at the end of the game, and Therrien lost his mind, and the Habs lost the composure, and the Habs lost the series. Lars Eller, Rima says. Yeah. Good pull there, Reem. And I just don't see why the Senators... I don't see where the Habs are that much better than the Senators. Especially,
well, they're faster. They're faster than most teams.
But if you can't get to the front of the net...
The Sens, you know, they're faster. They're faster than them, for sure. But the size is an issue as well. I think that, you know, that goes both ways. You know, I think there's speed there in Montreal that I'm not saying Ottawa's slow by any means, but I think Montreal has a speed advantage at the same time. You know, the size in the back end there and toughness too. You know, Montreal, Petrie is an upgrade over what they had before, and Yamalin can kind of be unpredictable, but is a physical player there too. But, you know, Subban and Markov, you don't want Subban being too physical. You want him to conserve his energy.
Sure.
And those bottom pairing guys in Montreal, you know, don't know a ton about them, but in the glimpses I've seen, nothing has been that special. But I really shouldn't say. As he mentions Price, I mean, that is the deal breaker, and he's the best in the league. But I think Ottawa is going to win in 7.
Has he?
I got Montreal in 7. I think it'll be a close series, and, you know, Richie and I might agree, you know, if the defense and forwards are stronger, I think Montreal's both are stronger, you know, with a slight advantage. You know, Ottawa really, I think, came on in the second half. I think, you know, there was an element of riding hot goaltending. I think there was a reason why the first half of the season they were one of the worst teams in the league. And I think, you know, you look at the inexperience of the Ottawa Senators, so you're talking about players like Mark Stone, Mika Zibanejad, players that haven't played in the playoffs. The Habs are coming off of a Eastern Conference final appearance. So I think the Montreal Canadiens, that is going to also be in their favor. So I like the Habs. I don't think it's going to be easy, but in seven.
I have the Senators in six when it comes to this one. I just think something about what Ottawa's going with, I don't see any reason why it's going to stop unless Carey Price, you know, like you said, he certainly can do it. If there's anybody in the league who's going to be that good, it's going to be Carey Price. And I think the Habs are going to need him because I think everything about this screams bad matchup otherwise. Let's head to break. When we come back, Eric the Hatchick of the Globe and Mail is going to join us, talk about the playoffs throughout the NHL. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to a special Tuesday edition of NHL Midweek. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program from the Globe and Mail newspaper, Eric the Hatchick. Eric, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Always love this time of year, Eric, and that's why we have you on right around the start of the playoffs each and every year. Got eight series we want to preview, and hopefully we'll start it off in the Eastern Conference. We'll start with the Habs and the Senators. That's where we just left off. And from my perspective, something about this matchup for the Montreal Canadiens is a bad one, even though they have been one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference throughout the course of the regular season. You look at this Habs team, and the Senators just seem as though they've been able to neutralize the skill and the speed of the Habs in their four games that they've played this season. How do you see this Habs and Sens series shaking out?
That's a great question. You know, like, let me just make one quick comment about the macro view of the playoffs this year, because I've been doing this 37 years, and I can't remember a year where I've had to draw that loony out of my pocket and flip it to make my decision because the series are so close. I mean, it is, you know, when I started doing this in the 80s, you know, you often would have, you know, 21 team NHL, 16 teams made the playoffs. You would have a 69 point team playing a 105 point team in the first round. And once, there would be a miracle upset. But for the most part, you know, you could apply logic and rationale, and there were just some teams that were better than others, and they were just not going to lose to them. So that era has completely passed. So and it just gets worse and worse, or better and better, depending on your perspective and how you view the whole issue of parity. So, you know, let's start with Ottawa and Montreal. I mean, to me, as an analyst from the outside looking in, the one significant edge that Montreal has is the experience in goal. So Carey Price will win the Vezina this year. He'll win the Hart this year. He's the most valuable player in the league. He's the best player in the series by far. That should be enough to tilt the series in Montreal's favor. But you've had this unbelievable run that Hammond has been on for Ottawa, and that at this stage seems to negate the edge that Montreal has with Price, because the Sens are clearly playing with a ton of confidence in their goaltending, and sometimes that's all it is. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. The players believe in him. He believes in them. It's just meshing right now. Will it mesh as well in October of, you know, next year? Who knows? An awful lot of times a guy will go on a roll like this and he cannot rediscover the magic 6 months later. But for now, for this moment, you know, Ottawa's playing great, and they feel that they can beat anybody, not just Montreal. They feel they can beat anybody. So if you call the matchup in goal even, then, you know, from that point on, I like Ottawa's 18 position players better than Montreal's. I mean, you know, they each have a standout defenseman who are going to get Norris Trophy votes, Carlson and Subban, different guys, but both have a tremendous impact on the results. But if you look at Ottawa's depth up front, and certainly the way that that top line of theirs is scoring, Montreal doesn't have, I don't think, an offense to match what Ottawa is doing offensively. Turris has had a great season. Mark Stone, who plays junior hockey here in Calgary, has just been the hottest player in the National Hockey League for the past 2 months. And I just think that the momentum that Ottawa has built, I think it will be hard to sustain for a full additional 2 months, but I think it will be very easy to sustain it for an additional 2 weeks. And so, you know, if I had to pick in this series, I would give Ottawa a slight edge.
Yeah, Eric and Richie and Drew would agree with you. I was the only person out of the three of us to pick the Montreal Canadiens. Moving to the next series in the Eastern Conference, the New York Rangers versus the Pittsburgh Penguins. Of course, the Pittsburgh Penguins had to beat the Buffalo Sabres just to get into the playoffs. But I look at this series, and I know the New York Rangers are the heavy favorite going in, especially with the injury to Chris Letang and the fact that he's not going to be back for the playoffs. But do you think maybe the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to relish the underdog role and maybe make a series of this?
That's a great question, because to me, that this is the one series, based on the way Pittsburgh has been playing, and based on what you just alluded to, not just Chris Letang being out, but Erhoff being out, losing Alimata earlier in the year. When you think about when Pittsburgh made the coaching change and brought in Mike Johnson, it was with a view to really changing the way they were going to play. I remember I had a talk with Sidney Crosby about this during that player media tour in New York in September, and we were talking about puck possession and how he would have to change his game and how the team would have to change the way they played. And they felt that the season would be one big, giant dress rehearsal to get ready for the playoffs and try to learn and install this new system. The problem with the system that they were going with was it really required a defenseman that can move the puck, you know, and you know, like, you know, so Letang is perfect for that system. Erhoff, when healthy, is perfect for that system. Mata, I think, is going to be a star in the league within 2 to 3 years if he stays healthy. And with those guys in the lineup, I think Pittsburgh is a dynamite team and a fun team to watch. You take those guys out of the lineup, and suddenly Ben Lovejoy is playing 25 minutes. And, you know, I like the guy. You know, I got to know him in Anaheim a little bit. Very smart, intelligent guy. But when he is the guy that is carrying the load defensively, then that's not good enough. And so the ones, like, I think Pittsburgh wanted to play a certain way, and I think the injuries on defense have prevented them from doing so. So, you know, Paul Martin isn't the player that he once was. Mm-hmm. Rob Scuderi isn't the player that he once was. I just think Pittsburgh's deficiencies on defense compared to the strength and depth of New York's defense, you know, you want to think that they have a shot, but to me, that this is the one series of the eight that I had to pick. This was the one series that I felt the most confident by saying, no, I think I'm going to go with the favorites. I think the Rangers will win this one, and maybe fairly handily.
The Islanders and Washington, Eric, is an interesting series for me, not only because of the possibility if the Islanders were to win, they'd play the Rangers in the second round in the last year on Long Island, but just the dynamics of this series. I look at Washington and I wonder, you know, do they have enough secondary scoring to be successful? And I look at the Islanders and they don't lack secondary scoring, but Travis Hamonic doesn't appear to be in the lineup for the first few games at least, and he's been a huge factor in limiting Alex Ovechkin. How do you see this series turning out?
That's a great question, too, because someone asked me on the radio in Calgary earlier today if there was one series that I was more interested in than others that you know, that might be flying under the radar, that, you know, that nobody's talking about. Because let's face it, you know, in Canada, we're focused on the Canadian teams. Yeah. You know, we're focused on, you know, the Western Conference because, you know, this is where we are. And that's a series that I set because, you know, Washington Islanders it's the third-ranked offensive team versus the fifth-ranked offensive team based on among the 16 teams that made the playoffs. So I think it could be an exciting, dynamic offensive series. Ovechkin on the one side, Tavares on the other. You know, I've just found both teams fun to watch this year. I think Barry Trotz has done good work in Washington, and Jack Capuano is going to get some Coach of the Year awards for the work that he's done with the Islanders. So I think Washington is the better of the two teams. I think Washington is going to win, but I don't say that with any conviction, because I'd really like to see where the Islanders are at with John Tavares pushing forward. I've been impressed with the maturity of his game this year. You know, most Canadians, the last real strong memory they have of Tavares was at the Olympics last year, and you know, getting injured and then, you know, then missing the rest of the season, and the bottom just fell out on the Islanders season after he was lost. So he's rebounded with an extremely strong season. If you look at the gap between him and, you know, Ryan Strome, I think was their second leading scorer, it's enormous. You know, he was just a dominant offensive force on a team that, you know, that got a lot of help from Boychuk and Letty, and you know, and just, you know, managed to deal with the Yaroslav Halak fade in the last month. I think that's the one part of the equation where I tend to give a little bit of the edge to Washington, because Holtby was good from start to finish, and Halak was good from start to about the three-quarter mark of the season, and I don't think he's been as strong a performer in the final quarter of the season. Now, having said that, we all know that this guy has, in playoffs past, as the year he was with Montreal, been lights out good in the playoffs. He is capable of running hot, and he is capable of running cold. If the goaltending were even, I would pick the Islanders in this series, but I just think that I just like Holtby better than Halak, so I went with Washington.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is Eric Tkachuk of the Globe and Mail as we preview all of the eight NHL first round playoff series. Eric, one more series in the Eastern Conference. That's Tampa Bay and Detroit. Detroit has announced that they're going with Peter Mrazek to start in goal for game one. Sort of a two-part question for you, two separate aspects of the Detroit team. Are you surprised that Mike Babcock went with Peter Mrazek as his starting goalie in game one? And then the second part, how significant to Detroit's chances is the injury to Erik Cole? He's going to be out for the remainder of the season.
Well, both good questions. You know, I am a little bit surprised that he went with Mrazek, because I think that, you know, that what he's acknowledging is that he may need to use both his goaltenders in the series. So generally, you know, especially an experienced coach like Mike Babcock might have give his veteran guy that they signed to that long-term contract extension that they've made this commitment to, you give him the goal in the first game. It's on the road. It's not as if you can, you know, like, you want to win every game in a playoff series. You know that you probably won't. So I think that the general rule of thumb is that, you know, you give your veteran guy the chance to establish himself. If you go in there and you win the game, you roll with him and away you go. You know, so now you start Mrazek, and it, you know, what's the end game? You know, if he doesn't play well, you know, what if he plays well and you lose? Then what do? You really have kind of boxed yourself into a corner. You know, do you switch to Howard? You know, if you lose both games and you've had one goaltender in each of the game, now you've got a goaltending controversy going back home for game three. So yeah, I was a little bit surprised. You know, I had Mrazek on my fantasy team this year, so I watched him pretty closely, and like a lot of people, saw a guy that could be very, very good when he was on his game and battled really hard and, you know, gave up some inexplicably bad goals at key times in the game. I just feel that they believe right now that he's their best chance to win, and I guess they've sort of taken all of the sentimentalism out of the equation. And it's like, you know, we need really good goaltending against the top offensive team in the National Hockey League. And you know, when you think of Howard, you think of a guy who's steady and consistent, and Mrazek at his best can be spectacular. So maybe they feel that is the commodity that they need. You know, in the case of a guy like Cole, you know, I mean, I'd like to bring it into a broader discussion of the guys that were added at the trade deadline and how many of them have just not really fit in with their new teams. Like, I thought Cole was playing pretty well for them. But, you know, if you look at Winnick in Pittsburgh, if you look at Vermette in Chicago, might not even play in the opening game. You know, trade after trade. I mean, you know, Sakara went to Los Angeles, didn't really, you know, wasn't really the, you know, before he got hurt, the guy that made a difference to getting him in the playoffs. There was an awful lot of teams that paid a fairly substantial price to rent players in the short term, and they haven't made the significant contributions that I think the general managers hoped that they would. And in the case of Cole, because he's not going to be there, you know, this was an element that they felt that they needed, and now they're not going to have.
Eric, we're going to switch to the Western Conference now, and we'll save the series between the Winnipeg Jets and the Anaheim Ducks till the end there. We'll start off with the Calgary Flames and the Vancouver Canucks. Of course, you see the Flames quite a bit living in Calgary. Do you see any advantage in this series, or is this a pick'em series? Because I think all three of us agreed that there's a really good chance that this goes to seven games.
Yeah, well, and, you know, historically, these teams do tend to go to the you know, to go to seven games. And the last two times they played, it was the underdog that beat the favorite. So if that's the case, then Calgary's your winner. I'm afraid I'm going to be picking Vancouver in this series. And it has more to do with the fact that I like their experience, and Calgary, you know, Calgary this year reminds me a lot of Colorado last year. If you remember, you know, the analytics people hated Colorado last year the same way they hate Calgary this year. And partly it was because they did. They pulled rabbit out of the hat, you know, time after time after time. Patrick Roy got a lot of credit for pulling his goalie early, and they get tying goals, and they, you know, picked up points. I mean, they won the toughest division in hockey last year. That was an amazing achievement for a young team to be at the top of the Central. But of course, you know, when it came time to the playoffs, they couldn't get the job done, and this year they went backwards, which is, I think, what a lot of people expected. So, you know, turn your attention to the Flames. It was the same thing. I mean, there was probably a dozen games this year where, by hook or by crook, they just found a way of winning a game. And, you know, miraculous finishes. There was a game just before Christmas in Los Angeles where they were down 3-0. They tied it. They won in overtime. Really, it was that three-point swing on that night that made the difference between Calgary qualifying and Los Angeles qualifying. And even after all of that, you know, the Flames still have the lowest point total of the 16 playoff teams at 97. So even though the gap between them and Vancouver isn't that wide, and I think that the matchup it's the best possible matchup for Calgary in terms of the type of team they have. Small, fast, pretty disciplined. You know, Calgary doesn't give up a lot of power play opportunities, and Vancouver, I think, would absolutely kill them with the power play that they've got right now. But Calgary just isn't in the box that much. But I just think that, you know, the Sedins and the core group that hasn't been moved out of Vancouver, they're not that far removed from a long playoff run. And when you think about, you know, the way Willie Desjardins has deployed the Sedins this year, you know, they really seem fresh to me. I thought they would, you know, like in past years, the Sedins would be real good in the first half, and they just seemed to wear out, and they were looking old. And this year you don't see that. And I thought they were at their best. The best hockey I saw from the Sedins this year came in the final third of the season. I thought they were terrific. And I think that was one of the reasons they were able to overcome the injury to Ryan Miller. Just, you know, they are a one-line team offensively, and team, you know who you're going to check, and the Sedins still got the job done. I was very impressed with that. And, you know, Calgary is the same. I mean, they've relied on the Hudler, Gaudreau, Monahan line all season. They've been wonderful. You know, Yuri Hudler's had a terrific year. You know, he's my candidate to win the Lady Byng, led the league in even strength scoring. And, you know, Gaudreau was so exciting. He reminds me, a little bit of Fleury in the way that he lifts you out of your seat. Different type of player, of course. But you know, an exciting, dynamic guy. They haven't had that for a long time here. And John Monahan looks like he's going to become Ron Francis, just like a sturdy workhorse guy who's hurt, right? I mean, you know, they're not acknowledging that he's hurt, but he didn't practice yesterday. He was only on the ice for 5 minutes today. They say he's going to play in the opener, but if he's not at 100%, and if that diminishes the effectiveness of that line, that further undercuts Calgary's chances. So you're right. It could go either way. If Calgary were to win, I wouldn't be completely shocked, but I think there is a slight edge to Vancouver, and if it does go the distance, I think that we'll see that edge in the seventh game.
I like that Ron Francis comparison, Eric. That's a good one. Moving over to the Central, because we'll go back to the Jets at the end of the interview. Central Division and the Wild and the Blues is a series. I mean, they're really all interesting, as you spoke about how close it is. You know, you look at the Wild, four lines deep, really some top end defensemen, and Dubnyk's been incredible for them since they acquired him. St. Louis, you know, four lines deep as well, and a really good 1-6 defense. You know, they'll lean on you. They're not the quickest, they're not the fastest team, but they're big and strong. Minnesota's quick and they're on top of you. There's a little bit of a contrast in styles here, but similar depth. Talent-wise, I think the Blues are the better team, but I just can't convince myself that Brian Elliott, if he does start, or Jake Allen, or, you know, would make me pick St. Louis because of the question marks in goal, and that's why, you know, a couple of us here have taken the Wild in seven because of those question marks. How do you feel about the series?
Well, I guess if you base it on the fantasy team I drafted yesterday, you'd have to say I'm in your corner. I got four Minnesota Wild on my team, but that was partly because the St. Louis guys went so expensive.
Right. Yeah.
So, I would have been happily backed a few of them, too. Well, I mean, this is a series that I'm not sure how much of it I'm going to be able to see because I'll be covering Calgary-Vancouver, right. But I am very interested in seeing how it plays because I think that, you know, like, for example, the fate of Ken Hitchcock could be determined if Minnesota does beat St. Louis. Mm-hmm. I think there's starting to be an impatience in St. Louis that they've had a pretty respectable team for a number of years, and they just want to see more from them in the playoffs. Now, you could argue, and I think you know, if you were Ken Hitchcock, you could argue very convincingly that they've had the worst possible draws in years past. They always seem to run into Los Angeles when Los Angeles was going to win the Cup, or last year Chicago in the first round. They even had the Blackhawks down two games, and then Taves and Kane got it going, and they just couldn't overcome the injuries they had last year going into the playoffs, to Backes, to Oshie, Tarasenko playing with that cast on his thumb. And so they are relatively healthy this year. I'm going to assume, by the fact that Steen and Tarasenko played basically a meaningless final game of the season, that they are good to go and they are at full strength. Now, you talked about depth. I agree. Depth is one of those things where, you know, depth matters if you go four rounds deep. And there is no team that has better depth than St. Louis. I mean, they're going to be scratching defensemen for the opener that could play on a lot of teams. For sure, Calgary. You know, I mean, Calgary's down to five players that they trust, and St. Louis, I think, has eight. So I think they are poised for a long run. And my feeling is that whoever wins between St. Louis and Minnesota, you know, as long as they're not too beat up, is the favorite to come out of the Central, and probably the favorite to come out of the West. But having said that, I just think that Minnesota has a sort of dynamic going right now, and partly because of the confidence in Dubnyk. You know, you saw, you know, Hitch played Jake Allen a fair bit down the stretch, and that led me to believe that he wasn't completely convinced who he wanted to start in goal. And whoever he does go with, you know, there could be a quick hook there. You know, where Minnesota, you know, they made it absolutely clear. Even when they could have rested Dubnyk, they didn't. You know, he just went and played, what was it, 36, 37 in a row before they finally gave Kemper a start at the end. So, you know, if you talk to the Minnesota players, and they were through here a couple times near the end of the season, you know, like, it's not just paying lip service to the fact that they have confidence in him. It has made all the difference in their season. You know, I went on the air, maybe with you guys, I know I was saying it to everybody in October, that Minnesota was my dark horse to win the West. And believe me, you know, for 3 months, I was feeling pretty stupid. but I liked them at the start of the year, and I remember I said this. You know, I said, the only question I have is if they get the goaltending, and I do remember saying, I think Kemper's going to be the guy. I think he had two shutouts in his first two games, and I was feeling pretty cocky at that point. but whatever happened, they did solve the goaltending problem, and that to me was the one hole that they needed to plug, the one question mark that they had. I liked everything else about their team. I liked the way they play. You know, people who don't pay attention to hockey that closely, I think, still have that little bit of a residue of Minnesota, the post-expansion team, the Jacques Lemaire era, you know, the stifling defense. And if you watch them, you know, you guys in Winnipeg see them more than most, so I'm sure that you guys have already, you know, tuned to the fact that they're fun to watch. They've got talented players, and they can play a very entertaining style of hockey. So I'm not saying this with any confidence, but I do think that Minnesota is the team that will win that series.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is the Globe and Mail's Eric Dehatchik as we preview all of the eight first-round Stanley Cup playoff series.
Eric, Nashville Predators versus the Chicago Blackhawks. You talk about a bad first-round matchup for the Nashville Predators, especially with Patrick Kane coming back. I guess, who do you like in this series, and does Patrick Kane being there for Game 1 change your opinion of how this series plays out?
Well, I was going to pick Chicago anyway, and so I'm still going to stay with Chicago. And I would say this, that if you go back to last year, both Kane and Taves missed substantial amount of hockey down the stretch and were cleared to play in the playoffs and were back in the lineup. And if you saw their first two games, the two that St. Louis won, you know, it took Taves and Kane two games to get their legs under them, you know, just to get back into the rhythm of it, because it's hard to go back in the lineup. If you've missed a month of the season and you come back into a regular season game, it's difficult. If you miss a month of the season and then come back at that ramped up intensity that you get in the playoffs, it's even harder. So I think what you'll see is that Kane will, over the course of this series, start to get his legs under him and start to get his confidence. You know, even somebody as talented as Patrick Kane, you talk to him sometimes, you know, these guys occasionally, you know, they need something good to happen to get their confidence. I think that will happen at some point in the first round. I don't think it will necessarily happen in the first or the second game, but I think Chicago is good enough and deep enough and has enough of a playoff pedigree compared to a Nashville team that was gangbusters coming out of the gate and then just, you know, we're pretty average in the second half. You know, if the schedule had gone to 92 games instead of 82, I think Dallas would have caught and passed the Nashville Predators. I didn't like the way they played in the second half. the people in Philadelphia that I talked to tell me that this is typical of a Laviolette coach team. You know, he pushes them so hard that they often run out of gas. I don't know that because I've never covered one of his teams that closely. But I would be very surprised if Nashville beat Chicago. And frankly, I would be very surprised if they give them much of a series.
Eric, final question. I remember, you know, talking to you, I think it was two seasons ago, when people thought the Ducks were kind of on the way down, you had predicted that they would make the playoffs, and you were ahead of the curve in that regard. The Ducks seem to have kind of, for a team that, you know, won their division quite easily, they're not, you know, currying much favor amongst the media. And the Jets, of course, seem to be the darling. Some people picking them to win the Cup, and certainly everybody in this town picking them to win the series. How do you see Jets and Ducks playing out?
Well, it's a great question because I think that it's a bad matchup for Anaheim because, you know, they'll look across at the Jets and they'll see the Kings because Winnipeg plays, I mean, Winnipeg is so big and so tough. They've managed a really neat trick, which is that they're quick, but they are physical, and that doesn't always happen. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's an either-or proposition in hockey, and I think Winnipeg has done a nice job of straddling that. So Anaheim has always had trouble with Los Angeles, with teams like that. Like, Anaheim would have loved to get Calgary. They would have loved to get Vancouver. They would have matched up far better against both of those two teams. Winnipeg is just going to be a tougher out for them. And then when you think about where they're at with their goaltending, I mean, Frederik Andersen had a very successful year for them, but when Gibson finally came back from that injury, there was a period of time there where Bruce Boudreau was giving him a number of consecutive starts. Now, Gibson got hurt towards the end of the season, so I think Andersen becomes their default starter. But there was uncertainty in goal, again, going down the stretch this year, similar to what happened last year. And I'm convinced that the reason that Anaheim had so much trouble last year was because they had Hiller, they had Andersen, they had Gibson in there for a while, and they couldn't sort it out. And I think you have to sort out your goaltending. And for sure, if you have a plan A and a plan B, that is the most you can have. Like last year, there was an A, a B, and a C in Anaheim, and I think it really undermined them. So, you know, fast forward to this moment. So Andrei Pavlik's coming off three consecutive shutouts. I mean, to me, you know, 2 months ago, if you'd have said these teams were going to meet in the playoffs, oh, okay, so it'll be Hutchinson and Andersen. Well, you know, they could have Gibson playing goal by game three in Anaheim, depending on his health and how things fare with Andersen. And Pavlik, you know, I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know. When this guy runs hot, he is unbelievable. And so he is running really hot right now. You know, can he do that for 2 months? Probably not, but I'll bet you he can do it for 2 weeks. So I like their edge in goal. And so if you call that equal, well then, you know, then Winnipeg has better forwards than Anaheim does. I mean, you know, Anaheim relies so much on Getzlaff and Perry, and to some extent, you know, Kessler is there to provide that sort of, you know, secondary center that they didn't have last year. But Winnipeg is so deep, you know, three really good lines, all of which can score. So I think that Winnipeg will outscore the Ducks. It's going to be interesting because Corey Perry sat beside me in the Ducks dressing room a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about it. And I posed the question to him that you posed to me. Why is it that, you know, that you guys can have the best record in the West, win the division again, challenge for the, and no one thinks that you're a Stanley Cup favorite? And he said, yeah, he said, you know what, that was like that in the 2007 when I was coming up. Nobody liked us then either. And we just kept winning and we, you know, won a championship. And he said, you know, well, he didn't use the term, we'll make people eat their words, but it was some version of that. It's like, you know, we know internally that we are good enough and we will surprise people in the playoffs. And he said it with such conviction. Not anger, not bluster, just conviction. I guess, you know, in that 5-minute conversation or whatever we had, he made me more of a believer than I was. And so I suppose, you know, I'm calling it a pick'em series. I think I picked Anaheim in seven, but it's one of those things where I'm going not with my head, but with my heart, because my head says I like Winnipeg's team and the way they're playing right now.
Eric Dehatchuk is a columnist with the Globe and Mail. Eric, 28 minutes of absolute radio gold.
Yeah, he's the best.
28 minutes, boy, I didn't shut up, did I?
No, you know what? But we appreciate it, and awesome. Our audience appreciates it, and there's a reason why we have you on before the start of the season and before the start of the playoffs. And as always, we tremendously appreciate your time.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks very much, Eric. Let's go to break. Bye-bye. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Remo, there's no theme music here.
We weren't previewing a series here.
But we, I'll grant him that. We're going to very quickly, because we went way over time with Eric DeHatchick, but it's well worth it, given that was absolute tremendous, the way he broke down every single series.
Mm-hmm.
Quickly, we'll talk about the Rangers and the Penguins series.
Well, the Rangers have better goalie, better defense, better forwards, although not by much, if you talk top end. So, I mean, I think the Rangers win this one 5, Drew. I don't think they really, you know, Rangers will come at you in waves. As the Pittsburgh defense, as Eric alluded to, can't match up against the Rangers' depth. The Rangers have the best 1 through 60 in the league, I think. St. Louis probably second. And I think they'll be able to handle Pittsburgh's better. And then if it came down to goaltending, I would trust Lundqvist in any event. Plus, I think Vigneault is a better coach than Johnson. So I've got the Rangers in 5.
It's funny, Henrik Lundqvist is a better goalie, but I don't think it's by as much as people are thinking. You know, Marc-Andre Fleury, 9 shutouts this year. He had a 920 save percentage, 2.3 goals against. Mm-hmm. I know all that, but I think just I'm saying Marc-Andre Fleury, I think, quietly had an excellent year for the Pittsburgh Penguins on a team that really had a bad season. You know, Drew, I really want to pick the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, I want
you'd
them
be the to, only one though. I haven't heard it yet.
I want them to have a chance, but with no Chris Letang, no Christian Ehrhoff.
Ehrhoff's cleared, so he sounds like he's getting close to coming back.
Well, a question mark
yes. With
Christian Ehrhoff. Definitely Letang is out. Oh. Ole Matta is not playing, and it looks like Brian Dumoulin is going to play on the bottom pair there.
Yeesh.
The Penguins at times were playing with 5 defensemen.
Daniel Winnick was going to be playing for them.
Well, that's because
as a
they
defenseman.
Only had, yeah. That's
don't
because they only had 5 defensemen. So I want to take the Pittsburgh Penguins, but I think the Rangers are going to be too much to handle. Adding Keith Yandel to an already excellent defense there with Ryan McDonough and Dan Girardi and Mark Stahl. So I can't take the Pittsburgh Penguins. I'm going to take the Rangers in 6.
I'm going to say the Rangers in 4. You look at the Rangers, and it's hard to find very many flaws with that team. The defense, you know, forward group, they get, you know, tremendous scoring from all lines there. And anytime you got Henrik Lundqvist in goal, you're going to be okay. So I think that's a clean sweep, and I think you're going to see significant changes in the offseason in Pittsburgh as a result.
We just saw significant changes in Pittsburgh.
We're going to see them again. You know, 2 straight, you know, how many more years of bad exits before the players themselves have to change to some degree. Anyways, let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. When we come back, we have 2 segments to go, and we have 2 series to preview. You're listening to TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Richie, you seem puzzled.
No, we're Mr. Nice Guy.
It's Alice Cooper. He's from Detroit.
Thought he was in Arizona, though.
He likes golf.
Alice Cooper, we were talking Kid Rock. You could go the Motown angle, which I would have preferred
the Motown.
You could even
angle.
Do Eminem, we were talking about.
You're just upset the Devils aren't in the playoffs. You can't hear any Bruce right now.
That's true.
Yeah.
Hey, he's from Detroit. Come on.
Fair enough. Welcome back to NHL Midweek. This segment of the show is brought to you by Not Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. The grand opening is on right now.
That's awesome.
With the lowest pricing ever. So be sure to check them out, notautocorp.com. Beautiful new gallery. In case you haven't driven by, we do recommend stopping in, checking it out. Everything they have there is beautiful.
Yes, Alice Cooper did go to high school in Arizona.
So...
But he was born in Detroit.
Are we going to play like Duncan Keith's song going to be from Winnipeg now? Because he was born in Winnipeg and raised in BC.
Reem, you should have played Ba Wada Ba by Kid Rock.
I considered it.
How about, can you consider pressing the bumper for the Tampa Bay-Detroit series?
I can consider that. Okay. Ba Wada Ba, it's an explicit, it's kind of explicit, you know?
Yeah.
Tampa Bay and Detroit.
The Lightning and the Red Wings. Peter Mrazek against Ben Bishop. In the goaltending matchup between these two teams. From my perspective, nobody is talking at all about the Tampa Bay Lightning, and they very well could be the best team in the NHL coming into the playoffs. They seem to be pretty healthy on their back end. They had some injuries before, but they seem to be mm-hmm. getting over those injuries. And they got some guy named Steven Stamkos who can put the puck in the net pretty much at will.
Well, Drew, I look at the Tampa Bay team, and I think this is a nice bracket for them. I think they're playing against a Detroit team that has a similar style, but they're more talented than Detroit. you look at them, you mentioned Steven Stamkos, but the depth throughout the roster, I mean, the Tyler Johnson is a real good player. Mm-hmm. Kucherov, Palat, I mean, you look at Callahan with the character game that he has, and Filppula can win draws, and you look at the back end, Hedman's a great player, and you got puck movers, and Matt Carl, and you look at Braden Coburn, it looks like he's coming back from injury, and Anton Stroman, they can all move the puck, right? And so... And then Bishop's a solid netminder. I want to see what he can really do in the playoffs. I think that could be a question mark. But you have a smart coach. Everything in Tampa Bay lines up for me. I think they're Detroit could upset them just because Babcock and the fact that there is a lot of skill as in they play a similar style. And if Detroit does get some goaltending, I feel like Detroit loses game one and Babcock makes some adjustments and makes it a little more difficult on them. But I think the Lightning team is strong and I like their draw because I like them similar to kind of Winnipeg-Anaheim. If you win that series, I like the Lightning matchup great against Montreal. And I think they're a better team than Ottawa. So I like the Lightning this year, Drew. I don't think, you know, maybe because of where they are, they're not getting a lot of attention, but as he liked them from the beginning of the season, and I have they're better forwards than Detroit. Although Detroit's good forwards, certainly better defense than Detroit. A little bit similar, but I think again better. That's the thing. This team is similar but better in every aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Except for coaching.
The skill that's going to be on display in this series, guys, is going to be incredible.
Yeah.
Both very, very strong teams. The Tampa Bay Lightning, best offense in the league, best 5-on-5 offense in the league, one of the best possession teams mm-hmm. in the league. Ben Bishop is healthy, you know, with the exception of Jason Garrison, who's not going to be ready for the playoffs. They're relatively healthy, the Tampa Bay Lightning. Really like the moves they made in the offseason, and the moves were made in the offseason for this exact reason. Two players, I've talked about this all year, Anton Stralman and Brian Boyle, two players that had a big part in the New York Rangers almost winning the Stanley Cup this year, have been excellent for the Tampa Bay Lightning mm-hmm. this year. And, you know, Richie mentioned the Tyler Johnson, Andre Palat, Nikita Kucherov line, that's almost their most dangerous line. And Steven Stamkos is the most dangerous scorer, with the exception of maybe Ovechkin in the NHL. And, you know, he plays on the top line. But that line has caused all types of matchup problems for other teams in both the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference. But I think, you know, John Cooper's an excellent coach. He's won at every level. I think you'd have to give the advantage to Mike Babcock, but I think John Cooper has this team really playing well heading into the playoffs, and I think this team was really disappointed by getting swept by the Montreal Canadiens last year. Obviously, Ben Bishop was injured for that, but I think that this team really this year is going to be too much for the Detroit Red Wings to handle, and I know the Detroit Red Wings are actually a pretty good defensive team.
Yep.
You look at their defense, and maybe it's not as strong as in previous years, but then you talk about the forwards and how good some of their forwards are defensively, and namely Henrik Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a close series. I think that the Detroit Red Wings are going to win a few games, but I just think the Tampa Bay Lightning this year are too much to handle. Their offense is, if you watch them play, they move the puck very quickly. They're dangerous on the power play, and I like, you know, what they've done with their defense. I think Anton Stralman has really helped out a guy like Victor Hedman, who mm-hmm. really had his coming out party last year, and, you know, they added Braden Coburn, you know, a guy who has had some success in the playoffs with the Philadelphia Flyers. I just think they're going to be too much for the Red Wings to handle. So I like the Lightning in six.
I like the Lightning in six as well. You know, Stralman is a guy I thought was aided more by Mark Stahl than anything, but I was wrong about that, because I mean, Stralman's been very instrumental in what they do. He fits into what they're trying to do really well. Puck movement team, get the puck out of his own zone. You look at Tampa Bay, and I like them in six as well, Ezzy, and I think to me, you look at the who they match up, they'd have a tough time with a bunch of the Western teams, the big strong teams.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not really any big strong teams in the East. And Washington would give them trouble, but they're not in their bracket. And I think the Rangers are just a solid team and probably just as good, if not better.
Yeah, I think that's your conference finals matchup in my perspective.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Drew. But I don't think there's a lot of teams that just present, you know, Ottawa may give them a little bit of trouble if they do match up in the next round. But I think Tampa Bay wins this series in six.
Yeah, one of the sort of interesting storylines coming in, Tampa Bay, obviously we know about their offense. First in goals at 2.75 per game. Eighth in the league in shot attempts, 55.9 per 60 minutes. The Red Wings tops in the league at shot suppression, 45.9 shot attempts per game is all they've given up. Mm-hmm. So that is sort of
an
interesting.
That's because they have the puck too a lot.
That's sure, because you know, Detroit, I mean, you know, you can certainly say that you're, you know, a little bit, that I'm personally underestimating Detroit a little bit. I just think their injuries, the uncertainty that they have in goal.
I'm just not taking any Babcock team lightly. And there's skill on this team. So, I mean, can they win? Absolutely, they can win. I just do not think they will.
And there's a lot of storylines, you know, in addition to the fact that this is just going to be a great matchup, and these two teams are very evenly matched and have tons of skill. You've got Steve Yzerman, the GM of the Tampa Bay Lightning, facing the team that he obviously won three Stanley Cups with. Mm-hmm. You've got Steven Stamkos finally trying to prove himself in the playoffs. We've seen what he's done in the regular season, but he hasn't quite done it in the playoffs. And then you've got Mike Babcock, who Richie just mentioned. Is this his last playoff series potentially with the Detroit Red Wings?
Good point, Ezzy.
So, Richie, you have Tampa Bay in six?
Yeah.
Ezzy?
I have Tampa Bay in six.
I think that that's Tampa Bay in five from my perspective. Let's head to break. When we come back, we have one more series to preview. That's the Capitals and the Islanders. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Most of the shows on the station come back to a little piano instrumental, right? I think it's generally how we come back from break.
It's a good choice by Remus.
It is a good choice. It sort of puts you in a New York state of mind, if you will.
Well played, Drew.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Obviously, one more series to talk about as we wrap up our playoff preview show on this Tuesday evening. I'd like to point out, before that, programming note, Saturday, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with the late start time in Anaheim. Our show, 3 p.m. the start time on Saturday.
3 p.m.
3 p.m.
News
3,
to me.
3 p.m. Really? News to you?
Has our show ever been on at 3?
Yes. Earlier in the year when the Jets played on the West Coast. So 3 p.m. Saturday for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And then next Tuesday for NHL Midweek.
Okay.
Because Monday and Wednesday, the Jets are playing at home. So we'll do midweek next Tuesday, 7 days from now.
Thank you. Thank you, Drew.
You're welcome.
I also have a calendar.
Well, okay, just wanted to make sure you got it. So 3 p.m. on Saturday, and then 6 p.m. Tuesday. Let's do one final series. It's the Islanders and the Capitals.
New York Islanders and Washington.
Thank you there, Remo. The Islanders and the Capitals.
Why was the New York Islanders and Washington? Where are the Capitals on there? Just because the Islanders need to be distinguished from the Rangers? That's just first
names?
You
can't just go New York versus Washington.
Right, I guess.
Should we compare?
Yeah.
New York Islanders and Washington.
All right.
Now, what's the Rangers?
New York Rangers in Pittsburgh.
Okay, so it's only the distinction of the last name.
Yeah. Wow. That you're okay with that?
That's okay.
Okay. The Islanders and the Capitals. Four games against played between the two teams. The Islanders won two, both in overtime. Washington won two, one in a shootout, one in regulation. Is the difference in this series come down to Braden Holtby versus Yaroslav Halak?
I am conflicted on this series, Drew. I liked what I saw from Washington most of the year. I think the improvement on the back end is substantial. I think signing Niskanen and Orpik, the Orpik contract was very big, too big. Niskanen was big, not as unnecessary, I thought, as Orpik, but in a vacuum, in a 1 or 2 year span, like, this is an important contract. It makes their defense that much better. Their right side is strong, their left side is strong, complement of puck mover and stay-at-home guy. Hope he's been really good. Their top line's incredible. Their depth lines are nice. Their secondary scoring, I wonder, that second line, can it keep going? I know Glenn Cross has been added there to help out. I do have some concerns down the road about that. And they look at the Islanders, Ezzy. I mean, a four-line team that can score in all lines. I mean, they're playing Strom with Tavares here, so you have to see what matchup that's going to be for the Capitals. But then you got Bosso on the second line. Franz Nielsen appears to be healthy. Matt Martin appears to be healthy. That kind of fourth line's like the bang. Tom Wilson is injured right now and kind of concussion. We're not sure about him. And he'll be important in a big series with Clutterbuck and with Cizikas if he plays with Martin. But it's the Islanders' defense. I mean, if they have Hamonic, I feel so much better about that Islanders team. And they don't, and it doesn't appear they will for the first little bit, if not the whole series. And then you have Halak and Holtby. Islanders can certainly win, but I think it's going to be a Capitals team that just has the edge in terms of healthy bodies and a little bit more balance.
Yeah, Richie, I think it's undeniable that Braden Holtby gets the edge over Yaroslav Halak in goaltending. He's really had a great season. He could almost argue that he's a Vezina candidate in a year, which he has no chance of winning the Vezina, because I think you can already give it to Carey Price,
you're right.
And Pekka is probably second. But
Rob Ford think about Carey Price's opportunity for the Hall of Fame?
Richie, Braden Holtby has really established himself as a top 10 goalie in the NHL. Yeah, and, you know, Mitch Korn, the goaltending coach there, deserves a little credit. But Braden Holtby deserves a lot of credit because he struggled last year under Adam Oates. So I think you give the edge there to Braden Holtby. And I think you maybe give a slight edge to the New York Islanders on forward, but it's I think that's a wash. I think the Islanders and the Capitals both have four lines.
Slight edge to the Islanders, I think.
Slight edge.
Yeah.
And then on defense, you might give a slight edge to the Capitals.
Well, no Hamonic. I think you give a big edge to the Capitals.
You give even more of an edge, right? I still like the Islanders in this series, though. I think this series also is going to be one that goes to seven games. This Islanders team, I think a guy like Calvin DeHaan, you're going to see him play more minutes in the absences of Travis Hamonic.
And he was a healthy scratch at the end of the year as he's champing at the bit to get in.
He's a smart defenseman. He's a smart defenseman. Yeah. He's only in his second year in the NHL. Yeah. And Nick Leddy and Johnny Boychuk have done well on the top pair there. They might break those guys up now that Travis Hamonic, because Travis Hamonic plays top minutes.
Griffin Reinhardt got.
I was
going to
say
some.
Griffin Reinhardt is going to be.
I don't know if he's going to be in there or not, but
you would think
if he does play, he'll
to.
Most likely be in a bottom pair just because he hasn't played much in the NHL this year. But to me, the Islanders where they really separate themselves is up the middle. And Richie mentioned Franz Nielsen is healthy. He's an excellent two-way player. John Tavares had one of his best years, not statistically, but he was up there as far as points go. And I think this year, this New York Islanders team, I think, really has a chip on their shoulder. Didn't make the playoffs last year. Lost in six games to the Pittsburgh Penguins 2 years ago. I think even though Yara Halak might not be as good as Braden Holtby and might not be a top goaltender, I think that this team is going to outscore the Washington Capitals. I think it worries me a little bit, even though they've got some depth on Washington. I think if Alexander Ovechkin isn't going, we know that Alexander Ovechkin, he paces their offense.
Sure.
And I think that the New York Islanders, because they've really improved and they're a good possession team, not that the Capitals aren't, I think that you're going to really see this is going to be a coming out party in the playoffs for guys like Ryan Strome and Anders Lee, Brock Nelson, who Richie and I saw UND on good. The third line there. This Islanders team, I think it's young and it's hungry. And even though, as I said, I know everything, you know, kind of points towards the Capitals winning the series, I think the Islanders are going to win some close games. Here's my bold prediction. I think you're going to see the most overtime games in this series. I think that's how close it is. Not to mention
some of the other series,
but I think you're going to see lots of games go to overtime here. I like the Islanders just a little bit. I'll take them in seven.
My concern from the Islanders' perspective is, you know, with... you know,
just because I said that, the Capitals are going to sweep them.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a great series. I agree with Eric DeHatcher completely. I think it's a great series.
But if Leddy and Boychuk go up against Ovechkin, I mean, you're going to... Brian Strait and Calvin DeHaan against Nicklas Backstrom?
Well, Backstrom and Ovechkin are the same line.
Well, they haven't been playing on the same line recently for Washington. They've been split up.
They split them up a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if they put them back together, though.
I mean, if that's the case, then, Drew, then I misspoke, but I would expect them to be playing together.
They've been playing Kuznetsov with Ovechkin a little bit up the middle there. Now, I don't know what it's going to be for the playoffs. Usually,
I would be surprised. I mean, maybe they want to do that because of Hamonic, but...
Yeah,
I,
won't you want to spread out your threat? Your
I don't
threats?
Know. I put my best guys
Brian
together.
Brian Strait's a pretty solid defenseman, and even though Calvin DeHaan has struggled a little bit, he can skate, and I'm not worried about that pairing. Not to say, Drew, that you know the Washington Capitals won't present some matchup challenges, but I think they'll be fine.
I would be surprised if Backstrom doesn't play with Ovechkin in this series. I mean, they would balance out the offense, sure.
Yeah. And wouldn't you be playing into the Islanders' hands? I know they're two of the... I mean, Backstrom's the best passer in the game. Well, one of the best passers.
Yeah.
Ovechkin's one of the best scorers in the game. So, you know, it's sort of... You know, you can see it from both ways. Are you playing a little bit into the Islanders' hands if you load up the top line? Because that doesn't mean that you're putting the Islanders' defense
too
thin.
I just wonder why break up a good thing.
I understand breaking up, you know, and that's a very fair point.
They already have, yeah. So
I mean, they have been. It's just, I mean, you look at that, especially without Hamonic in the lineup for the Islanders. You know, if you're Barry Trotz, well, you know, now I can get Nicklas Backstrom, depending on how the defense is deployed for the Islanders, I can get Nicklas Backstrom against a lot of weaker pairing defensemen.
Sure, that's fair.
You know,
that's fair. That's why I lean towards Washington. But as he mentions, and I like Ezzy's rationale, it's true. If the Islanders are to win, they are going to be outscoring. Like they're going to open it up.
Yeah,
sure. Washington's going to play into that, and the Islanders have a lot of depth in scoring, and their defense can move the puck too. That's the thing.
Any factor into this being the last playoff series on Long Island?
Well, I think it's a factor, Drew, because the emotion. How do you predict that? I mean, you saw the emotion when they played Pittsburgh that time. They frankly probably should have won that series.
Sure.
So, you know, Washington Capitals team that I think has a chip on its shoulder. if you know, I hate the cliche, the first game's important. I'm not going to say that, but the first two games here...
So you're going to say the first two games
are
important.
The first two games here, I think, Drew, are important in terms of getting the Islanders to lose their confidence. If the Islanders were to get a game and split it early, as you get them going back to the Island with more confidence and maybe Hamonic possibly returning, the momentum could change a lot more. I think the Islanders would get more confidence from that from maybe some other teams. And with the younger, as being a younger team, they might it might have more impact.
Quickly, your prediction?
I'm taking the Capitals in seven, but I would not be surprised if there's an upset.
Ezzy?
If you're listening, I already said it. Islanders in seven.
I'm just recapping it. You say Islanders in seven. I think I am going with Washington in seven as well. I think it is going to be a great series. That's it for our NHL playoff preview show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to both Eric DeHatchik and Dan Wood for joining us. In case you missed any of the show, it'll be available for download on iTunes and on tsn1290.ca. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Royal Sports, and Not Auto Corp. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and your website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Reminder on the programming notes, Saturday 3 p.m. for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and then next Tuesday at 6 for NHL Midweek. For producer Michael Remus, analyst Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Until Saturday at 3 p.m., we wish you good night and good luck.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.